Memorize this simple route. Left, right, third right, second left, right. One more time. Left, right, third right, second left, right. Got it? Great.
Now try doing that same route back.
See? Memorizing where you came from is easy. Getting back there, not so much. That's why Smart has Ready to Spot, which finds the route back to your car in a split second. And it's left, second right, third left, left, right, by the way. Smart.
More music. More inspiration. Fuga. Online.
Hi there. Welcome to Healthcare Hour with me, Colleen Quist. You tune to VUCA Online Radio, your inspiration radio station. Healthcare Hour with me, what's all that about? It's really about us getting to know what's happening in healthcare, understanding that people work in healthcare. They have emotions, they have feelings, they get frustrated, they get tired, they get hungry, and they get quite impatient with people who they're working with. So it's about saying that they're people. What also happens is we tend to put healthcare people on pedestals and we treat them like superheroes, which means that we don't see them as being real. And unfortunately, we all suffer then because of that. Today's show is quite exciting. We're going to be talking about how to improve mental health in the workplace. But more about me, I'm a life coach and a business coach and also a confidential sounding board for doctors and also all their stakeholders. I would like to encourage you to download the app, VUCA Online. You can download the app. You can also see all the different other guests that are on VUCA Online. But also you can look at www.vucaonlineradio.co.za. It's very important also from a show point of view, from what it is that we talk about, that you have a voice, that you contribute, that you tell me, hey, let's get this guest, I like that guest, and that you have a voice too. Because as much as this might be about healthcare, we are all part of healthcare. We're all part of it. So when we come back, we're going to meet our guest today and we're going to be talking about improving mental health in the workplace. And our guest today is Navlika Ratanji, and we'll be meeting her soon.
In many countries on our continent, gay people face discrimination and intolerance on a daily basis, and their rights are non-existent. To find out more about what it's like to be a gay man in Tanzania, we are going to phone Anthony Mbise, a gay Tanzanian man.
Central Prison Services. Hello?
But we can't, because he's currently in jail for being gay under Tanzanian law. He has been in jail for over a year. Help us fight for gay rights on our continent. Go to the SA Human Rights website to find out how you can help. P.S. Anthony Mbise isn't his real name. Using his real name would only make his situation worse.
Stay woke with VUCA Online Radio.
Okay, I'm with Colleen Quist. And today's show is all about improving mental health in the workplace. And our guest, thank you very much for joining us, is Navlika Ratanji. Did I pronounce that correctly, Navlika?
Yes, you did. Well done.
Okay. So thank you for joining us. So Navlika, you've written this book, or you've edited this book rather, on improving mental health in the workplace. And we're going to be talking about that. But let me introduce you to the audience. Let me just read your bio to them. Navlika is currently the Managing Director of ICAS South Africa, a Gibbs MBA graduate and clinical psychologist with diverse experience in human capital management, behavioral risk, change management, managerial consulting, global management consulting, leadership, women in leadership, organizational resilience, and organizational strategy. She has a wealth of experience in dealing with mental health in the workplace and has consulted to many South African corporates in this regard. Navlika has an abundance of training, customer engagement experience, and has been selected by McKinsey & Company for their Women Empower event, Developing Future Female Leadership for the Global Community. She regularly acts as a guest lecturer at Gibbs, is a group mentor for the postgrad DIP and MBA programs, and a research examiner for the MBA programs. She completed her MBA in 2016 with distinction. She was awarded the prize as top graduate for the program, and she has furthered her executive education at Harvard Business School in Boston. She's presented at many conferences locally and internationally, and has also been a contributor of a chapter in two books, Managing for the COVID-19 Vortex and Tourism, Travel, and COVID-19. So welcome, Navleeka. Now that people know who they are listening to, who they are seeing chatting to them, let's hear more about you.
Thank you, Colleen, for the warm welcome. I'm really delighted to be on your show and to share insights around the book itself. What is it that you'd like to know more about me, though?
Yeah, so what makes you tick? We can see that you're very passionate about women, for instance. You're very passionate about mental health and certainly about, mental health, women, the workplace. How did you get to be passionate about these? Did they find you or did you find them?
I think it comes from really my formative years in terms of growing up in what I would describe as a typical Indian household, filled with lots of gender stereotypes in terms of what an Indian woman should look like, should aspire to be, the kinds of things that they need to be good at, looking after the husband, looking after the home, those kinds of things. And growing up in a home where my grandmother, who was really ahead of her time, really did encourage us to study, to educate ourselves, and to challenge societal norms from a young age. So I think that was part of my worldview from a young age, in terms of recognizing that these are the kinds of things that may come your way. These are the kinds of things that people may tell you, but don't be afraid to ask why. And I think that has really followed me through various stages in my life, is to really just understand where are people coming from? Why do they make the decisions they make, which is part of what's driven my interest in psychology as a career as well. But then also bringing that into the workplace is just to understand that human dynamic in a much deeper way, and really recognizing people for who they are as people. And I like how you started the show today, Colleen, in terms of really just positioning that healthcare workers too are really just people. We all have the same difficulties in life, challenges in life, and there is so much positive that can be done when we connect with one another as people, and the realness that comes with that. So I think that's been a driving force of where my career has taken me as well. Like you said, did I find it or did it find me? I think it's a bit of both. But that's really the basis of unpacking that, the context of women have so much to offer in general. And recognize us as people and what we have to offer rather than what gender we are. So that's just a little bit about that kind of sort of basis. Mental health is another big area that I'm extremely passionate about. And it really is around spreading the message that we have the power to look after our mental health. And what are we doing on a day-to-day basis to take care of our mental health? And that's a lot about where the book comes from, which I'm sure we'll dig into more details around. And another area of passion for me is also the future world of work. It's an area that I'm really deeply intrigued about because, again, it follows the same premise of unpacking who are we as people. What are some of the qualities that need to be honed in on right now as we stand to make ourselves marketable now and into the future? And how do we cope with the challenges that we presented with now and into the future? We are faced with a very, very fast-paced environment of change. And generally speaking, as human beings, we are wired to deal with predictable environments. We like our comfort zones. So how do we elevate those qualities that we already have inherent in us to deal with stress, to deal with challenges? But not always do we have that ability to deal with it in a sustainable way. So that's another area that I'm deeply interested in, which is very connected to mental health in any case.
Okay. So we can see how it all interlinks. I think sometimes our purpose and our calling, everything finds us as opposed to us going to find them. And you think, gee, how did this all align and did it happen? But I loved how you openly sharing how you grew up and that, you know, we grow up with the idea of this is the narrative, these are the stories, this is how it works. And that it's also about saying, you know, it's one thing when you see how it works and you question it as opposed to blindly following it. So many people aren't aware of the fact that they blindly follow other people's stories as opposed to choosing it for themselves. So it's very refreshing to you to hear, to say no, to encourage people to say, but don't just accept the status quo. Yeah. I think also from a future of work point of view, it's also interesting to see that we can't just copy paste how it was, but no, let's just templates and we'll just make it fit, you know, bang, 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 fit. Yeah, it really doesn't work like that.
I think another example of that, Colleen, is I think which is topical right now, is with people, a lot of people working remotely because of the pandemic, and many organizations right now are asking for people to return to work. We see that same dynamic play out where all of a sudden we're saying, this is the workplace you knew. What's the problem? What's the resistance? I don't understand it. Why are we struggling to settle back into the workplace? And I think that that's the fundamental issue that people are failing to see, is that the people that left the workplace about 2 years ago, when we were forced to work in the pandemic kind of conditions, and many people had to work from home, many people obviously being healthcare workers and that kind of thing, that they had to continue working in the environments. But we have a bit of both, I'm sure, listening in at this point in time. But the people that left the workplaces, whether you were physically still going to work or not as a result of the pandemic 2 years ago, those people that are coming back to work right now are not the same people. And workplaces need to recognize that. Things have shifted. Things have changed. People value different things. People have learned different things. They have grown in different ways. And they have experienced different life challenges over these past 2 years that have molded them in terms of where they find themselves right now. So I think it's a good example also of what you're saying in terms of this copy and paste kind of idea. We can't just copy and paste the kind of environment and what used to work 2 years ago and assume that it's going to work in this context because people have changed.
I've seen in a lot of industries, it's especially your traditional, you know, your industries that are very the way we used to do things, and they're very proud of how we used to do them 60 years ago, 100 years ago. When we discover that it doesn't work anymore, it's almost like, well, let's do more of it then. You know, it's almost like in truckloads. Here comes the what we used to do. We're now going to not just get a snippet of it. Now we're going to get a truckload of it because we're going to make it work.
It's the debate between persistence and tenacity, which interestingly is also one of the qualities for future world of work. It forms part of GRIT, which I'm sure you and the listeners have heard about. GRIT stands for guts, resilience, influence, and tenacity. And the difference there is persistence, which is a quality that's often admired, can sometimes also be the definition of insanity. Because it's about doing the same thing over and over again. And there really isn't the gap to evaluate how is this working and how do I need to adjust my course as a result of the feedback that I'm getting from what I'm implementing. Whereas tenacity is about saying, yes, we implement something, but then we analyze the feedback and we adjust our course as a result. And I think that's a progression on understanding that persistence has a role to play, but actually what we need to be is tenacious.
Okay, so as I'm hearing you talk, I'm reminded of you that a man cannot cross a river twice because the man has changed and so has the river. And this is exactly our situation of before people were fighting to stay in the office. No, we can't stay at home. And I thought, oh, wait, I didn't imagine it would take 2 years. But I was thinking, oh, they're going to fight to stay at home now. Yeah. And it's also because we've changed. It's not the same building. It's not the same people going back to the building.
And the building doesn't feel the same anymore either.
Yes, no. Yeah. So let's pop out for a break now and we'll be back soon.
How do you know the life or personal coach you are about to work with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So, before you share your secrets and spend your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com or call us on 012-751-7608. The ABCCP, the professional body for coaches.
Waking up all day with Vuga Online Radio.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist, and we have a delightful guest with us today. She's Navlika Ratanji, and she's speaking to us all about all things our mental health, our wellness, how we have fought against leaving the office, and now we're going back to the office, but also about how we improve mental health in the workplace. And not so long ago, mental health had nothing to do with the workplace. You know, it was not the workplace responsibility. But let's look more about this book that you've edited. Could you explain to the listeners, you know, what does an editor do?
So an editor really does, in my experience, I'm not sure if it works the same all over the show, but in my experience, the role that I played in this particular book is that the publishers had actually come to me. I had done a lot of work in the field of mental health. I'd participated in many conferences as a speaker on mental health and well-being. And the publisher actually approached me to say, this is an area that is not widely written about. Would you be interested in editing a book on mental health in the workplace? By this time, I had already written 2 chapters for them in other publications, also relating to mental health. But because of the value that that chapter brought to that book, they thought that it required fleshing out of its own. And they felt that a book in this regard would really change the landscape and bring the conversation to the fore, a much needed conversation to the fore. And I, of course, jumped at the opportunity to be able to spread the message and really unpack mental health in a much more dynamic way. There isn't a lot written about it, especially in the context of the pandemic and post-pandemic world. How do we navigate through the mental health crisis that we're dealing with at this point in time? So the process, Colleen, was that I then mapped out what I thought needed to be included in this book. How did I want to share the message? What was the message that I wanted to share? And then to really bring on board experts that could flesh out the different areas. So I provided the framework in terms of what I see as the framework of the different chapters, what I wanted covered in the book, and also some detail on what I wanted to come alive in that chapter, because mental health is a very broad field. And every chapter, you know, you can literally write a book on every chapter as well. So it's very broad. I have to provide guidance and direction in terms of the key elements that I wanted to surface in this book. And then to really lean into my network of people that I've perhaps worked with in the past, who I've crossed paths with, that are understood to be leaders in their own right and experts in their own spaces around these different areas. So you'll see that the book has a diverse offering in terms of, I have a nutritionist that's written the chapter in terms of diet and mental health. I have someone who is a financial coach and expert in financial well-being that's written the chapter in terms of financial well-being and mental health. I have a medical doctor that's come on board talking about physical health and mental health. So brought in different experts to talk about that specific area. And then the process of editing, how that works is that I then provide them with the guidance of what I want that chapter to be about, the areas of focus. They then apply their minds to that and bring out their flavor in their area of expertise. It then gets submitted to me. I edit that in terms of, does this really meet the mark of what we're trying to achieve? And then also to navigate the flow, because that can be quite complicated as well. You have different writers coming from different aspects. So really just to bring it into some kind of coherent flow of then still being able to share that message while keeping the originality of the writer's way of trying to share that message, but also having somewhat of a golden thread throughout the book. So that was sort of just broadly the process. There's various to and fro's that then happens in terms of the manuscript that is edited. And then trying to piece that all together in the final version that you see.
So it translates into lots of work and running after people to get them to do it. And then when you change it, they go, well, wow, you should have written it yourself, I'm sure. But yes, as you said, it's to maintain the golden thread through the different sections. So I see that the book has got three different sections. The first one is mental health in the workplace, understanding the current context. Two is mental health is not an island, and so well-being is holistic and has multiple dimensions. I think you've spoken about that, you know, you've alluded to it, of saying that there's nutrition, there's physical, there's spiritual, there's all the different aspects that, because we are systems, one part of the system impacts the next part of the system. So you can't change yourself physically without it impacting mentally, you know, whether it's positive or negative. And then the third section of the book is coping mechanisms towards a way forward with mental health. So, yeah, let's look now, before we go for a break, let's look at the difference between mental health, mental wellness, and mental illness. Yeah. And where are we with those in a workplace?
Yeah, that's a great question to kick off with, Colleen, in terms of really just positioning the need for this book in many regards as well. And that is, people often use the term mental illness and mental health interchangeably. And the truth is that mental illness and mental health exist on the same continuum, but on opposite sides of the continuum. So we're not actually talking about the same thing when we talk about mental illness and mental health. So very quickly, mental health is really about how we are operating on a day-to-day basis that includes having healthy relationships. When I talk about healthy relationships, I'm not talking about everything is hunky-dory in our lives with all the people that we connect with. Of course, we have disagreements. Of course, there's conflict. But that doesn't become sort of the defining feature of all of our relationships. So we can have those disagreements, but it's in context and we're able to move past that. So we have healthy relationships, we have relatively stable levels of mood, energy levels, eating patterns, sleeping patterns. We're able to make decisions. Again, doesn't mean that some decisions are not hard to make. We can have that, but we're still able to get to the point of making a decision, whether it's the right one or the wrong one, is irrelevant. Making decisions, the ability to laugh at ourselves, and the ability to find meaning in what we do. Those are sort of just some of the broad areas that I'm talking about when I refer to mental health. When we talk about mental illness, we're talking about people that are constantly finding themselves in difficult relationships, constantly having conflict in relationships, elevated or decreased levels of mood, energy levels, sleeping patterns, eating patterns, that it's leaning towards one side, either too much or too little of. We have difficulty making decisions. So it's all the opposite of what I'm talking about from a mental health perspective. But the key that I want to share with everyone here in terms of understanding that there is a difference between mental health and mental illness is that each and every one of us are susceptible to mental illnesses. In fact, one in every four people, close to one in every three people at this stage, are struggling with mental health concerns at this point in their lives or at some point in their lives. And every one of us is not only susceptible to mental illness-related symptoms, but we dip into showing those symptoms on a day-to-day basis. The defining feature is how much time we are spending exhibiting those symptoms that would then classify whether we are struggling with a mental illness or whether we are able to then balance ourselves out again to then move towards the mental health-related symptoms. So I hope that that gives some clarity in terms of what we're talking about.
It certainly does. And I like that you call it a continuum, because for me, I always imagine that each day it's basically, do we move this way or do we move that way? And it's not a like, oh, now you're in this block and now you stay in this block. It really is mindfully knowing, have I gone further this way? Have I gone further that way? What do I need to do? Yes.
And the power that we can do something to shift where we at. Yes.
That we're not just powerless sitting in wherever, whichever side we are of the continuum. And that in any day, depending on what's happened in your life, you know, whether you've gone through loss, whether you've gone through 2 years of COVID, we are moving up and down. And sometimes you think, oh, I'm moving a bit too close to this side. What am I going to do to move away from it? When we come back, we're going to hear all about what the workplace can do and also look at more about saying that we're not powerless in this. So let's pop out for that break.
The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is a professional development center for professionals who aim to improve their professional standing. This means that the learning programs we run are more than just academic programs. They are work-based programs that focus on leveraging your current experience as a professional to build your overall profile. A year down the line, the Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is developing into a preferred center for professional development in Pretoria, with 8 professional development faculties including accounting, teaching, entrepreneurship, as well as IT and many more. For more information, go to acwbl.org or dial +27 12 751 7608. The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning, where work is learning.
Stay woke with VUA Online Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuned into Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. And our guest today is Navlika Rantanji, and she is speaking to us about improving mental health in the workplace. She's edited a book. She's spoken to us about how she went about editing it, the overall golden theme that needed to go through the book. She called on her network to bring in experts to write their different chapters, made sure that there was sort of some sort of continuation from a voice point of view. And then also we've looked now at the difference between the different terms that we talk about or actually don't talk about. So your mental health, your mental wellness, your mental illness. So how do we normalize speaking, talking? As much as, okay, maybe some people don't want to talk about physical wellness, okay, but how do we actually have that it's okay to speak about it? It's okay to say, no, I'm not okay today. And as we said, that's a continuum of we slide this way or we slide that way, but not sometimes we have a choice as to where we're going.
Colleen, I have to say that the pandemic has really played a positive role, whether we see it that way or not, in trying to normalize the conversation around mental health. We certainly have a long way to go. There still is a stigma attached to mental health, but I must say that we have seen the start to shift in a positive way in terms of people recognizing that they have felt impacted by the pandemic. And because more people were able to talk about the fact that they were impacted in some way, it elevated the conversation around mental health and well-being. So we now have the duty to build on that conversation. And that really is how we address the stigma relating to mental health. Is really just about opening up the conversation. The beauty part is that we can all play a positive role in shifting the narrative around mental health. So in the example that you gave around talking about physical health and well-being, most people won't think twice about saying, oh, I have a headache, or I had such a bad flu over the weekend. They wouldn't think twice about feeling discriminated against or feeling marginalized or that people are judging them. Well, maybe a little bit with flu symptoms because automatically people think now, oh, I wonder if you've got COVID. Yeah. But in many instances, presenting and representing a physical symptom seems to be a lot more okay to talk about compared to saying, I feel deeply lost right now. I'm feeling sad most of the time. It's almost like there isn't a space to talk about that. And so I would say, in terms of your question around how do we shift that and how do we start to normalize that, is firstly, we've got to take ownership of our own feelings. And we've got to take stock of our own mental health and well-being. So when we spoke about that continuum just before the break around shifting on a day-to-day basis, we dip into symptoms of mental health and mental illness day-to-day. It's really where we find ourselves strapped to for longer periods of times and that we then define ourselves as being mentally healthy or being mentally ill. The key there is that we can physically do things to look after our mental health. So once we take stock of how am I really doing? How is X, Y, and Z really impacting me at this point in time? When we can check in on ourselves, it starts to create more of a self-awareness firstly, but how do we then extend that into whether it's our family dynamic or even our team in the workplace? How do we open up the conversation to just say, it's not just, hey, how are you doing? How are you really doing? What are some of the challenges that you've been facing? What's working for you? What's not working for you? When we can unpack just one layer deeper into how somebody is coping at that point in time, we start opening up the pathway and the communication around connecting on our mental health. And so I strongly feel that we are all accountable to change the narrative around us. And once you can open up that pathway, you start to create a culture of care. And in this day and age, we also talk about creating a culture of virtual care, because we're working across, you know, different digital platforms as well, which make it even harder to connect with one another as people. So we need to hold that in mind as well. That, you know, even if you're having an online meeting, as an example, you only have one view into someone's world, one dimension into someone's world, compared to when you connect face to face. And I'm sure health workers out there recognize the both the reward of connecting face to face, but also the burden and the drain that comes with that face to face engagement as well. But you can surely appreciate that there is so much more information that you get from people connecting with them. At the end of the day, we are social beings. Human beings are social beings. Our brains are social organs. We need to connect with one another to understand, to have a sense of self, to understand how we belong in this bigger picture, how we fit into this bigger picture. And at the end of the day, we process who we are and how we attach meaning to things in relation to others. So there is work that needs to be done to address the stigma around mental health. But I also want to put the power in everyone's hands to say that a lot of that sits with us in terms of, do we open up the conversation at dinner to say, how has all of this impacted you? How are you coping? Whether you're talking to your child about the move between online schooling and now being back into the school environment, whether you're talking about how the impact of having to connect with your friends digitally over the last 2 years and now being face-to-face again, those kinds of conversations, to what extent are you having them with those that are in your circle?
I think people, like right in the beginning, we spoke about our conditioning. And I think, you know, you and I have both been raised by saying, oh, you don't talk about those things. You don't, you know, somebody would say, oh, I've got to go to hospital. And you go, oh, okay. As opposed to what's happening? Why are you going? You know, so some people would see it's like curious, but it's not curious. It's caring. So it's about teaching people, how do you care at a layer and a level lower than just surface? I think also what happens is that people default to fixing. So if I say to you, how have you coped? How have you managed? What's happened? What have you been your challenges? I can't necessarily fix it. I can listen. I can hear. I can, you know, depending on who I am in your life as to what I can do. But often people have, well, I can't fix it, so I won't listen. Yeah.
So and connected with that. Sorry, connected with that, Colleen. It's also around, if I ask too much questions, then, you know, perhaps I'm going to uncover information that I actually don't know how to deal with and that I don't want to deal with. So it's almost about being scared of the answer. So when you say I'm not okay, people almost want to run in the opposite direction. And I think the point you're making is an important one, that you don't have to feel like you have to have the answers when you're faced with that kind of situation. And sometimes it's just by allowing the conversation to unfold and just being able to listen that can make all the difference.
So as a coach, it's basically holding the space so that the person can let it out. Not that you can fix it or make it go away or whatever, but it's also important that as the manager or the leader out there, that you realize, oh, this is beyond my ability. Can you refer the person? And not refer the person as a hot potato where you literally throw off, it's gone, but to refer mindfully and respectfully to the next expert in the row who is able to deal with the situation.
Yeah. So as much as we just spoke about everybody is accountable to change the narrative, I do believe that leaders have an incredibly responsible role to play in this space as well. And you're so right. It's not just about saying, oh, this is not my area of expertise, I'm going to pass you on. Yes, that part of it is important because we need to be able to connect them to the right resources so they can get the help that they need. And the workplace has become an incredibly important part to facilitate that. for employees to thrive. And again, the pandemic has highlighted for many workplaces that it's not just about your employees here to do the job that they were hired to do, but it's also about, am I creating the right environment for the employee to thrive? And what role can I play in employee well-being so that at the end of the day, I can get the best out of my employee, but recognizing that my employee is a whole being. They come with all the difficulties that they're experiencing in life. And we have to create the platform for them to meaningfully work through those challenges in order to be productive in the workplace. And so leaders play a critical role in facilitating those things. And so what that means is, at the bare minimum, they need to upskill themselves in being able to at least have a conversation around, how do I hold that space? Like you say, so we talk about a leader as a coach as well. So again, we're not saying they need to be trained as coaches, but they certainly need to be able to have the skill to be able to have that conversation with their employees. And to say, I'm really sorry to hear that you're going through such a rough time. I'm not sure what kind of advice to give you at this point, and maybe it's not advice you need, but have you spoken to somebody about this? And can I put you in touch with X, Y, and Z? If you have an EAP program in the workplace, that's when the value of referring on in that kind of space to a professional who can then deal with those issues. But to not just leave it there. How do I check in with the employee? Since our last conversation, how have things been going on for you? It's you mustn't feel afraid to bring up the conversation again, because it's not expectant of you as a leader to have the answers even when you bring it up again. But right now, we need leaders with heart. We need leaders to have heart-centered leadership skills. And being able to check in with your employees is one of the most practical ways to be able to show that you care.
Okay, so let's pop out for a break. And then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation.
How do you know that the consultant you're working with is who they say they are? How do you know if they can do the job? At the Africa Board for Coaching, Consulting, and Coaching Psychology, we can tell you. So before opening your company up to a stranger and spending your money, check with us first. Visit www.abccp.com. The ABCCP. The professional body for consultants.
Your inspirational radio, Vula Online.
Welcome back. You tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. And today we are joined by Navleka Ratanji. And we've had a very interesting conversation about mental health in the workplace. And traditionally, mental health was something that A, is not spoken about, and certainly not in a workplace. It has always been that you go to work, you don't have to enjoy your work, you don't have to like the people you work with, but it's nearly weekend, just hang in there. I think we've seen that things have changed. Certainly, it's interesting that Navleka has shared with us that the pandemic has made things better because it's normalized how we speak, that we do speak about mental health. We've looked at the fact that it's a continuum, and we're now looking to see, as the manager, as the leader of people, what is it that you can do? I think in the beginning, we had, let's have a spa day. Let's have we'll deliver fruit to your desk. And it's saying, no, it's, where's the environment? But also from mindful listening, from empathetic listening and conversation, where you are generating, where it's generative from that we don't all know how to do that, but go get training. Go learn how to do it. So what other advice would you have in closing for the manager who's sitting out there going, yeah, right, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, I think I want to remind leaders and managers out there that you don't have to be a psychologist. You don't have to be a coach. in order to show that you care. You don't have to have expertise, but you do have to have the right intentions in terms of creating the right kind of environment. And sometimes that means unlearning needs to happen, learning, relearning, upskilling and reskilling that needs to take place. I'm not sure how many people out there are aware that South Africa has one of the worst statistics in the world when it comes to relationships between managers and their employees. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done from a leadership level to upskill. A lot of that is to do with being able to practice more of the soft skills that we talk about. But in fact, as a result of the pandemic and also looking at the future world of work, it's seen much more as essential skills now, not just as soft skills. So we do need to make sure that we are able to connect with our people in meaningful ways. It's not just about delivering an instruction and expecting your people to deliver output because you've given an instruction. We have to connect with those people. I'm sure some people have even heard about the Great Resignation. A lot of that has to do with people saying, well, if you don't care about me and my mental health and well-being, then this is not the right organization for me to work with. And some of you may even heard the statistics around between 70 and 80% of people leave their managers, not their jobs. So it's an incredibly important aspect that leaders take seriously, that they need to showcase how they create an organization with purpose. And one of the ways to do that is to create an environment where people can connect with each other and they can have that psychological safety that we talk about. We create an environment of trust for people to feel open to talk about their difficulties, their struggles, because that impacts work deliverables in any case. So it's just about being able to provide the platform to deal with it more proactively rather than reactively after the crisis has hit and we need to deal with the issues that come from that. And one of the key ways is really to be able to show that you are human at the end of the day. I think we started our conversation there, Colleen, really about saying we need to be able to connect with one another at the end of the day. That is the platform. That's the relational aspect of being human beings, to connect with one another. And leaders need to open up. And in fact, one way of doing that is showing your vulnerable self as well, and saying that I don't have all the answers, but let's work on it together. Let's try and problem solve together. And so one of the key takeouts for those listening in today is open up the conversation, check in with your team members. And you can do that much more easily if you've checked in with yourself, because you can say things like, you can reflect on your vulnerability in order to open up that conversation. And it's not about saying that you want to disclose your personal life to people in the workplace, not at all. It's just about showing that I'm also human and I also get affected by what's happening around me. How have you been impacted by that? So I would encourage everyone to really just start there and to show up as leaders in that way.
And so I think we could sum that up in saying, you know, how are you? The answer is never fine or good. We need to go way deeper than that. And also what I like to remind people as well is, as we're saying, yes, the responsibility from the manager needs to, the company, the environment. But remember that we're all people. And so it's amazing how few people remember to check in with the manager. How's the manager feeling? What are they going through? How are they like, huh? No, it's not my responsibility. They're the manager, not my problem. It's no, they're people, okay? And so it's just as much as we said in the beginning that often doctors are put on pedestals. managers are also put in pedestals and that they just expected to know how to do things and not be human. So all of it is how do we do human better? There is certainly the responsibility from each of us to say, right, do the work on yourself, go into yourself, look to see, work with a coach, but also about saying that collectively we can do it better, we can do it well. Okay. So in closing, Navlika, anything else that you need to have shared with us?
Colleen, I think the one thing that always strikes me when we're talking about mental health or talking about being kind to one another, being kind to yourself, I suppose maybe just to leave everybody with a question rather than a comment. And that is really, how would you talk to your child if they were presenting with what you're sitting with right now? And I think that that's always a good sense check in terms of, would you be hard on your child and say, you're such a failure, you never get it right, in terms of how you may be talking to yourself, and that impacts your mental health and well-being. But how would you encourage your child if they're dealing with the difficulty that you possibly have? And that's a good way of trying to incorporate in our daily practice, in our daily reflection moments around how we are taking care of our own mental health.
Thank you. Thanks, Navlika. You have been tuned to Healthcare Hour with Colleen Quist. And we look forward to you joining us.
The home of inspiration every day.
Most people give up on themselves easily. You know the human spirit is powerful.
From news.
Countries across the globe have been hit by the COVID-19 virus.
Views.
There's a global trend to see an increase in GBV incidences, specifically domestic violence.
Sports.
What do you say? It's a really good ball. It's Shabalala.
And music to inspire you every day. This is Vuga Online, your inspiration radio station.
The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is a professional development center for professionals who aim to improve their professional standing. This means that the learning programs we run are more than just academic programs. They are work-based programs that focus on leveraging your current experience as a professional to build your overall profile. A year down the line, the Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is developing into a preferred center for professional development in Pretoria, with 8 professional development faculties including accounting, teaching, entrepreneurship, as well as IT and many more. For more information, go to acwbl.org or dial +27 12 751 7608. The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning, where work is learning.